Talking Tesla.
I'm not sure if like my foot should be on the brake or the accelerator.
Because they put rings on Elon.
It must be some sort of geometrical algorithm.
Are you ready now?
Oh, I'm sure this is math.
Tom? Robert?
Yeah.
Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
How am I expected to drive a car without autopilot?
So, here's the deal. You know, I'm not a good Parker Tom.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it. Yeah. I just think that this is a car company that is run by super geeks. All the other cars are going to be stupid cars compared to this car. Tesla.
You don't even have
Tesla.
Yep, I remember that. You've got a Model X. I've seen the future, and it is light pole charging.
No, I wouldn't call it a screw-up. Do you like your Model X?
God, it's beautiful.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Talking Tesla 66. We have 66. Been out looking at new Teslas. I'll share that audio with you. But Tom is the angry one. We've decided this
week. That's bull.
Very angry.
That is bullshit. I don't want to be the angry one.
Boy.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
What's
I'm not
going
the
on,
angry
Tom?
One. What are you talking about? Why do I have to be the angry one? Pragmatic. We could be that one. Realist. We could be that one. Maybe because we just went outside and saw our friend Jess and Dave's new Tesla.
Yeah.
You just got a new Tesla.
So new.
This guy over here's got a printout of his next new Tesla. Who's not getting a Tesla? What is wrong with this picture?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
no. Hey. If you didn't have a Tesla, how happy would you be, Mel?
I would be pretty sad.
If you don't
that.
Have your Tesla for 2 hours, you're pretty angry and irritable.
I just like to go out there and sit in it, even when I don't drive it.
Bet you do.
So let's go. Let's talk to Rob for a second here. Look, you've got a printout. You've done an exhaustive spreadsheet like inventory of Teslas. Are you going to get one before the end of the year? Are you getting the P100? Talk to us.
Oh, I need some more Mailox. I'm looking at the difference between a 90D, and of course I can't do without all of the added features, except for the rear-facing seat, which I have no use for. I don't fit. My son wouldn't fit. He might like to play back there, but that's neither here nor there. So that versus the P100D. I do wish they had the 100D. We've talked about this many times.
Yes, I would like the 100D without the P.
And I've already braced myself because I'll put this order in on like December 28th. And then on January 1, they'll say, guess what?
Yeah.
Now we have 100D.
I know.
But of course, they let you fudge and do things after you've actually made the commitment. And so I guess one question I have is, and I haven't figured this part out, to get the unlimited supercharging, does that mean you just have to put down the $5,000 before the end of the year and pick it up before the April 1st?
That's my understanding. You just have to order by December 31st. And I know that that's going to happen because it's going to happen. I'm worried about it too. But
Is that a factor? Like, is that honestly a factor for you?
Because it's an extra 30 miles maybe. If it's an extra 10%, it could be another 30 or 40, maybe 50
miles. You're talking about the P. I'm talking about the unlimited supercharger. Oh. Is that a necessary thing? We've all done the math on it,
right?
He does
a lot of driving.
Right, but again, even him, he's done the most amount of supercharging of all of us, and I think it didn't add up mathematically, even for you, the extra amount that you paid for enabling. I don't even know at the time, right? There was like a charge for supercharging.
Right, we figured that for the $2,000 you pay extra for when you buy your Tesla that includes the supercharging, that it would be about 50 to 55,000 miles of supercharging. And I figure now I've almost reached that at 3.5 years. I've had the car 36 months. I've done 80,000 miles. And I estimate that, you know, on a low end, I do 20% supercharging, but more likely I do closer to 50% supercharging. So that's like 750 miles a month of supercharging. And I should say equivalent.
It's a special case for you, though, honestly, I think, because you happen to work and live kind of near superchargers, right? They're sort of on your route, but not necessarily that. Like, it's a special case scenario for you that you've even gotten that high. I would venture that most people probably haven't gotten that high.
Right. I think that's true. As well, I don't qualify for a lease because I'm putting, you know, 23,000 miles worth of driving on my car every year. So I'm committed to buying it, which is what's making this extra painful. It's just an enormous cash outlay. So I figure what I want is $114,500. And I'm not going for any special wheels. I'm going for standard. I'm going for standard dash, which is that dark ash gloss dash, which I just looked at in Jess and Dave's car. It's nice. I like it. You know, I need to have some wood that I can knock to make sure, you know, when people say bad things, I don't want to have happen.
Well, let me get going.
I was going to say, there's also that figured ash wood, which I think is dull, more like mine, which is the Obechi. I'm bummed that they've taken away some of the options, but I'm sure that's because they're trying to streamline and make things much easier to produce, which I think I support.
My guess is it also has a lot to do with how many people were ordering those other options, right? Like, it's probably just a numbers game for them. They're like, oh, only 2% of people wanted the Obeche, so let's just kill, or whatever that number is. I don't know what it is, but my guess is that their manufacturing, like, statistics and data are so tight that they just know.
Yeah, I expect that too. And God knows if there's any more trees with Obechi wood left in Africa.
So I want to talk about my Tesla because I got it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I got it. So you're over here trying to decide whether you're going to get it. And I got mine. I got a lease because I don't do the miles that you do. And I love the white. I was worried about the white because people told me that I'd look like a sorority girl in white. But I love the white. It's beautiful. So now I've got an X in white and I got an S in white. And I love the air suspension. So I have quite a steep area coming up to my house. So now I just have a GPS located. It gets to my house and goes whoop all the way out. And it does make it significantly easier to get in and out of that car.
You didn't have the smart air suspension before?
Not in my car, not in my old S. So I didn't put it in because I had the option, but I'm like, no, I don't need that.
It also drives quite a bit differently.
Yeah.
With the air suspension.
Much better, especially if you set it to drop at about 50, 55 miles an hour. So every time you're on the freeway, it snugs down on the road. You get a little better range out of the car and it handles nicely.
So this car also has the 8 cameras for potentially fully autonomous driving, but right now it doesn't even do what auto steer 1.0 could do. It's got nothing except for cruise control. And it's sad because I'm driving down the road and there's not even the little blue lines that show up. There's nothing. Please, 8.1, come out.
Do you think your ex sits in the driveway laughing at your ass? Like, yeah. I can drive myself a little at least.
What the hell is wrong with you?
And he said by the end of this week. So by the end of the year, by the end of this week, they're working around the clock. We'll see. But then the question comes up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. If you were, had my car, which has the 2.0 hardware, and 8.1 comes out, do you rush to the freeway to try it out? Or did you just wait for a few days for all the other Tesla geeks to try it out just to make sure there's not a software glitch that kills a few people?
Do you think that there's a possibility that they're going to release it with the software glitch? They're going to be like, I don't know, let's just push it and see what happens.
No.
You, there's only so much testing you can do, but then you throw it out to tens of thousands of cars doing tens of thousands of miles, and you find out your little errors. That's why you have to update your software. I'm just saying, yeah. I'm a little bit scared because I know it's brand new.
The answer for you is yes.
Oh,
you
I'm
need
going
to go and run it and then drive to Oxnard. And then if you get into an accident, Robert, if he's on shift, he can take care of you.
This is where you don't want the accident to happen. This was one of the roads I was driving either in Colorado or in Utah. It was like just about a whiteout condition. And the only way you could guide your car was on the tire tracks of the car or vehicle in front of you.
It's a very well plowed road. No one can see the photo of it, but it looks very clear.
I'll send it out. It was one of the better roads because, of course, on the poorer roads, I was not taking photographs.
So the other things I really like about this car so far, and I've only had it for like 3 or 4 days, is, of course, the parking radar thing, which is on the X. So it's got the little radars around. And when you're going to park, and I'm a terrible parker, I think we've sort of established that pretty well. I'm a horrible parker. Now it just tells you you're 24 inches, you're 36 inches from something, you're 5 inches. That really makes parking much better. But then we have to get to the roof. So I go there, I'm picking up the car, and I thought I got the panoramic roof. And I was not sure if I really wanted the panoramic roof, but I get there and I don't have the panoramic roof. I have a sunroof. Now, we were just sitting around having coffee.
Way to pay attention to details, by
Thank
the way,
you.
On your $100,000 plus purchase.
Thank you. And then it turns out they've changed the name. So the moonroof, sunroof thing used to be called the panoramic roof. Then they had a true panoramic roof, and so now that's called a sunroof, and the true piece of glass is called the panoramic roof.
So explain to the people the difference. Does it open? Does the sunroof open?
My sunroof opens.
Okay.
It opens up quite a way. I can see it's going to be really useful in the summer when my car is so hot. I'll just
so
pop that open.
So it slides back inside?
It slides sort of inside
on top.
Somewhere magically.
It slides on top?
I believe so.
I have to go and have a look. I don't know if it's inside or outside.
What is wrong with the two of you?
It lifts up and it slides back.
So it
and there's
sits
a wind
top.
Deflector. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, and so that's kind of cool. I probably will only use it just to vent the car. I'm not one of those. I'm bald and white, so I'm not going to ride around with my head out in the sun. I'm just going to fry.
You can also just tip back the rear portion of the sunroof as a vent.
As a vent, yes. It definitely has a vent setting. So I was a little bit bummed. I'm like, oh, did I screw up? Then I went back to the site, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, did I screw up? And it turns out I really like satellite radio.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have satellite radio, you can't have the panoramic glass. I don't know why. And you can't have the roof racks. I probably won't use roof racks very much. But if you want to have roof racks or if you want to have satellite radio, you can't have the panoramic glass. And I don't know why you can't put a satellite radio thing somewhere else in that car.
It's probably the shape of it.
You can have it done aftermarket. If you go to somebody like Allen Ed's, you can get all kinds of stuff done.
But then they'll probably put like a little thing on your dashboard probably to accept it. Because when I had my original satellite radio, it just had like a little antenna
little
that you could attach somewhere.
Right.
So what are the other things? I can see better out of this car than my last X. And I don't know if it's hocus pocus or if it's a different... It seems that it's a little better view. I can see
out of
around.
The back is what you're talking
out
about.
Out of the front.
Yeah, you can't see as well out of the back because in my car, the headrests of the two outside back seats are low as the center headrest. But in the new cars, the outer headrests sit about 2 inches higher, maybe 3 inches higher, and it actually cuts off a fair amount of your view towards the outer portions of the rear window. But you may be feeling that you're seeing better because the seat has been changed, right? Now, Recaro makes the seats for the Model S and the X, I believe. And so they're upholstered different. They, I think, sit you in a different position. They're not as sort of relaxed and cozy. They're more firm. And so I think you probably are experiencing better posture, and maybe that's why you're seeing better.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is with that or the glass, but my wife had exactly the same revelation. We're driving around, and she's like, I can see out of this better than your old car. I'm like,
Maybe it's just overall brighter in there, and that makes it a little bit easier, right?
It
so, like,
be.
You don't have the body color paint, so a little more light is in the car, so it allows you to kind of, it's more of like less of a contrast between the inside of the car and the outside of the car, potentially.
Maybe it's gypsy tears.
I don't know what that means. Gypsy tears? Please explain.
Please explain. What is a gypsy and what are their tears doing?
Well, their tears are you know, supposedly magical. You've never seen the movie Borat?
Do not fear me, gypsy. All I want from you is your tears. Please give them to me or I will take them.
Now, the other upsides to me is it's super fast. So I had a standard 85, no P, no dual motors. And this time I got the 90D, so the two motors. And it is wicked fast. My last Tesla was so fast, it was scary. This is incredibly fast.
And that front motor is no joke because I was in the Tesla store over the weekend at the Westfield Topanga, and they have the sled in there with the dual motor. And because I was curious, the one Tesla in the very front is a D, so it has the smaller frunk. So I saw that and all of the space, you know, the difference between the space that I have and the space that you used to have and that. And then they have just the open sled. And that motor is gigantic. It takes up a fair amount of space up there. So it must transfer a shit ton.
How much? Well, you got your metric ton, and you got your sort of your American ton, and you've got your
shit ton. Yeah, that's correct. Of power to those front
wheels.
It
is remarkably faster. The only downside, and this is very important if you're ordering up one before the end of the year, is that front trunk is significantly smaller. So I used to be able to throw in my golf cart in that front frunk, and it was no problem. Wouldn't even go close to fitting in the new car.
Oh,
so I had to buy a new, much, much smaller golf thingy.
Poor
which
baby.
Most of you don't care.
No.
But if you're used to a big giant frunk and you use it a lot, then the D is going to take away that big giant frunk. Yes. So you need to keep that in mind.
Sad face.
But on the plus side, you can get wherever the hell you're going much faster. And you can go twice if you need to make trips.
And you know what's great for me is that I made sure when I had a loaner with the D configuration that I could fit my cooler in that frunk because I think that's the best place for your cooler. It's not knocking around in the back.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy your cold food, your ice cream, your lovely, yummy chocolate frozen things, you can put them in the cooler and continue to drive around and not be worried that everything's going to go bad.
The best part of the frunk. Yeah, the cooler's fine. That's great. But the best use of the frunk is if you're an athlete or if you've got smelly shoes or clothes, you put it in the frunk because that is not going to stink up your car.
Nice.
So unless you turn the fan on. No, I'm kidding.
It's my car smells so much better when I put my dirty, smelly, wet golf shoes in the frunk. It doesn't stink up the whole cabin.
Nice.
Unfortunately,
that's a pro tip right there.
It is a pro tip. Unfortunately, in my case, I stink up the whole cabin still, even though my shoes are in the front.
I mean, I didn't want to bring up that part of it, but you are a stinky Australian.
I'm very smelly. Now, the other things that happened is that we got an upgrade to the software over the weekend.
Yes, we did.
Now I can bring up Mars on the maps.
Oh, I want to see that.
That is pretty fun. So Easter the Mars. Eggie. Mars rover. So that came out right on like the day before Christmas. And then if you have an X and the wife has an X, they also did another Easter egg, which I'm sure everybody has seen. But basically, remember a year ago when they had the X and the X basically sang a song
and danced
and the gull wing doors were up and down and everything was flapping and the lights were flashing. You're like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. So they pushed that out just before Christmas. And if you put in model Xmas and then you walk away from the car and you hit lock, it'll start playing.
Is that the code? I thought it was holiday.
Model Xmas.
Okay.
And there's a couple of codes, but that
so
was the one.
So you push on the T in the middle of the screen for about 5 seconds, and then a little screen comes up, and it says, please enter your code.
Yes.
And in that code, Model Xmas. And then you have to lock the car and walk away from it. You can't be in it.
Right.
It knows if you're in it, so don't try to do
that. Don't do that. And make sure that it's lots of clearance, because mine was under a tree, and it wouldn't do it because it was going to bang the tree.
Don't put your grandma near it.
No,
because it is a grandma killer. We know that already from previous shows.
Maybe you should set up stanchions around the car.
Ooh, little velvet ropes around it while it does its thing. So the one thing, the YouTube video of this, fascinating at nighttime. The one thing that bummed me out about it was that the interior lights do not appear to be playing with the exterior lights, right? So the brake lights and the turning lights and the front lights move and they LED and they do all kinds of fun things. But the interior does not seem to be playing at the same time. And I think that would be awesome.
I don't remember if the interior lights were going on.
Couldn't tell from the YouTube video.
Super cool, though. I was like the coolest person ever at Christmas because they're like, everybody come on outside, let's go.
And I doubt that made you the coolest person ever, to be honest.
No, I probably need a lot more than that. But, you know, I was cooler than I was.
Yeah.
Maybe next year they'll add a fog machine and some laser out, you know?
Awesome.
Wouldn't that be cool? And some like Van Halen.
A little mini mirror disco ball pops down in the center. That would be so sweet. Yeah. Maybe Evan-X can make something like that and just add it to the gig.
I think that probably already exists.
Although you think about, like we talked about in a previous episode, the projection, like the heads-up projection. Imagine when that thing can play the game along with it, right? Oh, what kind of, like you could project like snow winter scenes like coming down the front window and stuff.
Wow.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Oh, and at Halloween you could project like zombies and screaming and then the car runs over you or something. It'd be so cool.
Yeah, with green fog.
Customized messaging like congratulations or happy birthday when you buy someone one. You can program happy birthday into it.
So actually this does bring up the fact that it is amazing that these software upgrades can do so much. I mean, the car gets better all the time. Then they do a silly thing like this, which is just for fun, which makes your life just sort of happy inside. It doesn't change the world. But then it makes you scared because you realize that Elon and the boys, they're just pushing a software thing and they could do anything to this car. So what if hackers get in? They could make your car drive off the road. And it starts to freak you out a little bit about when hackers get into this, and you know that they're going to, it's a little scary. But then I was thinking, Mel, settle down, because my phone has all my life information, my banking, everything. My computer does. So it's really no different from that. These are just the times we live in. And one day, when I have the little chip in my brain to help me with my memory, they could hack into that as well. So yes, it's a downside, but it's also such a tremendous upside. I love the fact that my car gets better and better and better all the time.
I'm already working on hacking into that chip in your brain. I mean, I didn't put a chip in your brain. No, yeah. Never mind.
What?
Just
what?
Like the Beatles, getting so much better all
time. Let's talk about Elon. Elon is boring. Did you know that?
I don't believe that's what the article meant. Like, so when you say Elon is boring, that means like he's sitting around and like he's like a bowl of saltines or something like that. Like, that's not what we're talking
about. That's not really what I'm talking about. No. So it's nice to be a billionaire when you're driving in traffic and you're getting really pissed.
Also nice to be just a billionaire generally.
Yeah, well, I'm here. I'm here. It's good. And so he's in traffic and he's getting really angry. And he says, you know what? We need to dig more holes so that traffic can go through tunnels. And so he tweets this out, which sounds like a sort of a crazy Elon thing to do. But then he's like, really, I'm really going to make a company that does this. And so people have been saying, is this just sort of a crazy billionaire guy that's lost his mind?
Yes.
Or is it that he realizes that he's going to have to develop technologies in Mars to do a lot of digging. So maybe this is all part of a master Mars digging plan. And in the meantime, let's dig some holes here in the world that is Earth.
Message to Elon, please don't start digging holes in my state. Come on, if you're going to dig holes, dig mass transit. We've done that. They're called subways. Really?
And it turns out that as a lot of companies, this was from NASDAQ.com, a lot of companies that used to dig big holes with big machines have stopped doing it because it's really hard. People like Caterpillar, pretty big company, they stopped their whole digging division because there's no money in it.
The Los Angeles that we live in, they were doing like a digging situation that was happening. And at one point, they dug a little too close to the sun, as it were, and giant sinkhole, and now no more digging.
No more digging.
But they did just finish
some digging.
And Boston
had the big dig, which was just like 17,000 times as much as it was projected to cost. Yeah. Digging is hard.
Not to mention Seattle, where the digger, the tunnel boring machine, got all fouled up because what they were digging through wasn't good. And then there's the big New York dig, where they're bringing water down from the northern parts of the state. There's like fascinating articles on these digging projects and all of the problems they run into. And can you just imagine if you run into that problem and your digging machine is like, I don't know, what was it, 400 million miles away or some crazy number like Mars? Oops, we need a new part. Okay, how are we going to get that there?
Well, on Mars, it's actually, from everything that I've read, kind of critical that they do get some tunneling going because that'll protect people from the surface radiation, at least the initial group of folks before the real protective buildings and the solar roofs go up. You know, they'll have to have some digging. So, and then this machine, you know, they'll be built to fit on the rocket. So they're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, these machines are not lightweight. These are ginormous machines. So when I first saw this tweet, I thought, well, maybe Elon's partaking in a little pre-legalized marijuana experiment.
No, you can't call Elon a stoner. He may have been driving, although if he's texting and driving, he shouldn't be doing that.
That's true. But then I thought, yes, this whole idea about taking this technology to Mars would mean you need to start almost from scratch on this tunnel boring business. You need to get a tunnel boring machine that's lighter, that's modular, so you can pull it apart and stick it on a spaceship. You need to make it incredibly reliable, not like those projects that we already talked about. And it needs to be run with a minimum of human input, right? How many humans are on Mars?
Zero.
Yeah, zero.
As of right now, none.
And probably as of 2024, there's probably still going to be zero.
Probably also zero, yeah. That's probably correct. But you could have something smash into Mars and then just continue drilling, maybe, no?
I don't know. You know, they have those things. They're called asteroids.
Yeah, there you go.
They have hit Mars quite a bit.
There must be some caves on Mars that they could use initially.
That brings up, if you're watching Mars the Show on Nat Geo, which is fantastic.
Which I don't get on my system. I can't watch it.
I actually bought it.
Me
I bought
neither.
It on iTunes.
Time Warner?
Yeah,
so actually,
I don't have any cable, but you know what I found? And I feel bad about this, but I had to see that first show before we talked about it on the show. Mm-hmm. And I was looking everywhere. I called my neighbor. They weren't home. I called my other neighbor. They don't have it. Nobody could get it. So my son was like, what about YouTube? So we went on YouTube. Or maybe I said, what about YouTube? Whatever. We went on YouTube. Bam! First episode.
Thank you.
Somebody ripped it onto YouTube. And, you know, quite honestly, I'm happy to say I send the National Geographic money every year. I get their magazine. So
yeah,
I'll give them an extra $5.
Photos, you know what I'm saying?
You can get it on iTunes. Buy the season. It's like $20.
Oh, good. I'll do that.
And it's really good. So one of the things they do, and I really like this show, it starts off the first few episodes I didn't think were very interesting, and I wasn't sure I was going to stay with it. But now I'm totally into it. So in one of those episodes, they go looking for natural Mars tunnels for this reason, and then they find a natural Mars tunnel. So Elon doesn't necessarily have to build them. There's a few that are already there, according to the show.
Did they find one of those giant space worms in it with the big
gnashing
teeth?
Interesting you should bring that up, because that's from Star Wars – And Carrie Fisher had a heart attack. And also, that's very sad.
Sorry, they Carrie, weren't on Mars. That was an
asteroid. Get well soon.
Yeah, get well soon. She had an incident on an airplane, which is something that you've covered in your other shows as well.
Lots of bad things. Sounds like she had a cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
The reports are a bit sketchy, but it sounds like she had a cardiac arrest just before they landed in Los Angeles, had a big MI, is in the ICU, and we wish her well.
We do indeed.
I wonder, if you're a physician and you're on a plane, this is for our physician colleagues, and somebody has a major thing, like it's somebody important and famous. You know, are you HIPAA-bound to not talk about it?
Yep.
I mean, you're ethically bound.
You're HIPAA-bound to not talk about the actual, the any treatment that you gave her, but you didn't, like, I'm assuming that that doctor would not have been the leaker of who was on there. But yeah,
sure.
I would, although, as a good Samaritan, maybe you're not HIPAA-bound.
Exactly. Exactly.
Situation.
You don't have a contract and a obligation to treat because you're just a good Samaritan, a bystander who comes up and helps, and you happen to be a doctor.
You have a moral obligation.
You have a moral obligation, but your malpractice doesn't come into play in that particular situation if you do something wrong, even if you're a doctor, because again, you're working under Good Samaritan. Am I wrong about that?
No, but that's only in California. That's state by state.
In some states, you are still bound, and that is a
yes.
Very, this is this week in HIPAA violations and Good Samaritan. Nobody cares about this.
No.
So let me summarize though. If you're a doctor and somebody has a heart attack on a plane, there's this thing called the Good Samaritan law where you can go and treat that person, but you're not held to the same standard that you would if you were in a hospital. And they're just saying, you're just out there trying to help. You can't get sued if something goes wrong because you're being a good Samaritan. In some states, they don't have those laws. And so when people drop, the docs and the nurses go, I'm not really sure I want to get sued by this person. So I think they're really important laws for docs to go and help. There are some states where they do a slightly different one where you can't do something completely egregiously stupid. Of course, you can get sued for that. But here in California, physicians and nurses and healthcare providers are outside of their normal work setting bound by Good Samaritan laws. I don't know how we got into this week in Good Samaritan
Not
laws.
Sure. Oh, because we were talking about Carrie Fisher.
Yes, who we wish well.
And so on your trip to Australia, you'll have like 20 hours opportunity to treat people as a physician. Will you then not be drinking your Chardonnay?
If only he was going to Australia. And
I'm going
not
to
New Zealand.
And I've been called to help out on planes all the time. In fact, I now have a bit of post-traumatic stress disorder. Every time I get in a plane to go to Australia, I'm like, who is going to get sick this time? Please, please. Because you have no equipment. But let's move on. Let's move on. And let's talk about Tesla being in Inside EVs. Notes that Tesla owners love them some Teslas. 98% said they would buy the car again. Compared to other hybrid plug-ins, way better than any other hybrid plug-in in terms of people saying, would I buy this car again? 10% more. And in fact, if you look at the luxury category, way more people would rebuy a Tesla than any other luxury car. Amazing. People love them. Some Teslas.
Let me just say that the next highest customer satisfaction was with Porsche. And if you look at the percentage scale, Porsche gets a C. And Tesla gets an A+, just to make it simple.
And just to sort of bring it home for our listeners, right? We've known several people with Volts who didn't re-up their electric car.
Right.
I did not rebuy my RAV mostly for range and speed of charging issues. So all of the things that Tesla owners don't come in. And then I will say about this, 100% of the folks in this room, I believe, would buy a Tesla again.
So, or have, or are going
or
to.
Go
have,
to
or
in a minute.
Or want to. You
and
know,
people will be asking, so Tom, why don't you?
Yes.
It's a cash situation. Oh. I could send my daughter to school and try to help her with her education, or I could be very selfish and buy a car.
How about community college does really well for a couple of years? That would make up for the difference, would it not?
Why don't you tell her, I'm going to buy a Tesla for myself. You can't go to an expensive college, but you'll get the Tesla in a few years. How's that deal?
I still have a hard time justifying. I have a Tesla in my cart right now. And it was a 60D because I really want the D if I was going to get one.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Very difficult to find that used, especially without the P in the more inexpensive versions. So you start throwing them in the cart and you get to 90 pretty quickly, add some sales tax, and that's a $100,000 purchase. That's too much money for me.
I got to tell you, my car payment is quite large. At least it's very large. And I don't want that car payment for many years to come because, you know, one day you're going to retire and something.
But you leased it. It's not going away.
It's not going away. So I was definitely thinking, like, this is sort of my midlife crisis thing. I've got a couple of Teslas. It's all good. But going forward, I really want a payment which is a bit more reasonable. So I'm really hoping that Model 3 is as wonderful and as lovely as I believe it would be, because I'd like to flip this really expensive car to the 3, but Tom's going to say, no, you're not. When it comes around, it's going to be too small and you're not going to want it.
I don't know. Again, I don't think so. I just think that we're still probably, for me anyways, and if the math that I did on a few episodes back is correct, you're still looking at a $66,000 car with all the bells and whistles, which is less by not a mega factor, but $40,000 less, let's say, and has all of the bells and whistles potentially. Still a considerable amount of money than if you factor in the fact that more than likely the $10,000, the $7,500 federal thing is going to be gone at that point. Like you could buy the low end 60 or wait for the fully loaded Model 3.
We don't know. Elon suggested that he thinks that most people are going to get about a $42,000 Model 3. So nice features, but not all the features. We don't know when it's fully loaded. The big question is how much they're going to charge for fully autonomous stuff, which right now is another 10 grand.
Right. That's what I'm saying is like that alone is $10,000. That adds a considerable amount to a $40,000 car. It makes it 50 right away. So would you, as an S owner who's paid $10,000 and then the Model 3 comes out and that fully autonomous is half that price or even free, that would probably irritate some Model S owners at least a little bit?
I understand. I think everybody who's buying them right now understands we are Ford funding this company. So I hope the Model 3 is a lot less because I do not want to have a $1,500 a month ridiculous payment that I have right now.
For the rest of your life.
I want a $500 payment. Even that used to seem to me like ridiculous.
Right. And hopefully the Model 3 is a 10 to 15 year car and you can just sort of, that could be the last car.
Well, there's continuous reports that show that the Model S battery is only losing maybe as much as 10%, but much less on most accounts in the first 50 to 70,000 miles. So this car could last easily 6-10 years at the rate it's going, maybe longer if you don't have the need for a particularly long commute or you're going to do a lot of road trips.
I think it could theoretically last much, much longer than that for most people. They were even saying that, even you wouldn't want to drive an S with like 40 miles of range on it. But if that's your commute and that car's 15, 20 years old, it's really about how does the interior of that car hold together. For most cars, it depends. Like that's really the key. Does the plastic start falling apart? Does the leather start cracking because you didn't condition or whatever it is? Like we don't know what that long-term build quality of those materials is going to be like yet.
Well, I've had mine 3.5 years and we were just talking around the table with Dave Mason and he's already, he took delivery within the week. Mm-hmm. He's already gotten like all this kind of leather conditioners and he's
oils and balms.
Yeah, he's rubbing he's salving and rubbing his seats already. Yeah. And I haven't done that. I've gotten the car detailed 3 times and, they've done some stuff to the seats and the leather has not cracked. It's all supple. The only messes up on the leather is once in a while when I hit it with a pen, but I have a little saddle soap. I'll wash it off. The headliner is great. The dash is fine, even though it's black. The steering wheel's in great shape.
Yeah.
There's no buttons to break.
How about the carpets?
Right now, they're very stained red from all of the Colorado Plateau mud, but the carpets have done well. They've got mats.
Yeah. You have the carpet mats, not all leather mats.
Mats. Yeah. So really, the only thing that ever was a problem for me is that on the B pillar, that sits behind and to the left of you when you're in the driver's seat, has this sort of like sculpted outward poking little point that meshes with the arm handle on the door. And if depending on how you get in and out of the car, I tend to rub it. And I rubbed it enough that in the initial build of the interior panels, it started to pull a bit of the leather apart. And I suggested to Tesla that they make a little plastic cap for it. I tried to fashion one. I was going to say, just glue it on with some silicone. And they said, oh, that's no problem. We've actually fixed it. And they just replaced the pillar for me.
Nice. And mine gets really dirty. That pillar gets super dirty coming, getting in and out of the car. You tend to grab the thing and touch it a little bit. So my B pillar on my wife's car is actually very, very dirty. It was clean when we got it.
Yeah. So let's keep talking about this, because I've got a fascinating question for you. So we're talking about our S's and whether we would buy a Model 3 and whether you should just buy and hold your S. So squiggle me this. I bought, or I leased, the Model S, the new one, because I wanted all the hardware for full autonomy, and I want to be part of that as it's rolling out over time for the show and for my midlife crisis. So, Robert, you're going to buy a 90D. The reason you're buying it, I think, is because the full autonomy hardware. Once you've got full autonomy hardware, yes, there's always going to be continuous improvements, but mostly in software, unless they do some magical LiDAR or something else. I think this car, and people ask me this all the time, this car is now future-proofed for 5 to 10 years. I think you buy this car and you can hold it and feel really good about it as they improve the software for 10 years. So this is the car you'll have for 10 years, because although there'll be tweaks, I'm not sure what else they could add that would make you go, oh, shit, now that's the thing I really wanted. What's the thing that would make you go, what, I really need this new thing? What is that new thing? I don't see it.
Well, with the fear of now putting off other people from buying, you know, if they came out with a new battery chemistry and the car weighs less, goes farther, and they can pack more batteries in, so the range is now 500 miles, that would make me a bit sad.
But go on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I was going to say. I think it's battery chemistry. There could be, if full autonomy becomes fully regulatorily approved, they could completely revamp the interior of this car as well, where you don't have to be sitting forward. You could have it where all the seats sort of rotate at a captain's chair kind of a thing. So you could have a table in the middle. Like, there's nothing, like, those aspects of it could change. And again, I think it's probably things like range, materials, but who knows?
And I don't know, that might actually need further federal regulations, because, you know, there are going to be accidents. Even if there's full autonomy, even if all cars are full autonomy, some boulder is going to roll into the roadway when you're up in the mountains, or some tree is going to fall, and there's going to be an accident. So how safe are you facing sideways in a 50-mile-an-hour collision? That, I think, you know, and you could just unbolt the seats, and they could probably design seats that just bolt right in and do that. But what if they also change the method of supercharging, right? We're going
to
talk about this.
Yeah, we're going to get
350 kilowatts, but you need to have a different battery, or you need to have a different wiring system. And sorry, we can't change your car, because that would be too expensive.
Yeah, and I guess the real question is Tesla – no matter if Tesla is a technology company or a car company or sort of a hybrid of those two things, companies rely on innovation. They rely on changing things to get people like you and to get people like Mel to upgrade their cars, to change things out. Did you owned your first S?
Well, I had a loan.
You had a loan. Like, that was one of those weird loan lease things?
Yeah, it was one of those original loan leases through US Bank.
But it wasn't. So it wasn't a lease, a pure lease.
No, it was basically a car loan I was paying off.
So then what was it that this particular time drove you to do the lease? Was it the lesser payment, the lack of a down payment? What was it for you specifically?
It was, for me, it was knowing that I'm flipping this car again.
Because of the Model 3.
Because
so
of the
only reason was because it gives you some Model 3 flexibility.
Right. Because I love this car, and I don't know, but I know that there'll be a decision point when this lease is up, and it'll be like, well, am I going to get a 3, or I really love the S? And at that point, I can just, you know, get rid of the car.
So, but what do you do in a scenario that your number comes up in 18 months?
Well, my number might come up in 6 months, but
right,
I just found a way to get rid of – I've got two on hold.
Correct.
And I just found a way to get rid of one, because Grandpa, who's been waiting for the Bolt, has been reading a lot, and he's like, maybe I should just wait for the Model 3, but it's going to be a long time. I'm like, well, I happen to have two on hold. He goes, you do? Well, can I have one?
But again, I'm not talking necessarily about that. I'm talking about for you personally. You're in the middle of a 3-year lease, and you want to switch over. Are you going to sort of hold off and then maybe have second generation Model 3?
Yeah, I will probably just sit. I'll sit on it, and then, you know, Grandpa might want one. Maybe Micah gets one. I don't know. But I'm going to sit on it.
And do you think Grandpa's going to have, like, it's not going to ride too low? Because that's one thing that we've been talking about,
right? That is the biggest
thing,
is like, with the air suspension, is it okay? So there's a lot of, it's a lot of questions. I'd really like to see a three.
And there's no way.
Not yet.
And there's no way Grandpa is looking to get a Soul or a RAV4 EV used, even though that's the form factor that he's looking for.
That's why the Bolt.
No fast charging and no smaller range, right?
You know, on the topic of you wanting to see a three, has anybody in this room, or maybe has anybody in Tesla Nation, heard anything about this, quote, Tesla special upcoming event?
What?
Well, I've had this on my calendar, January 4th.
That's a Gigafactory event.
Tesla Gigafactory, right. That event, I've seen nothing. Mm-hmm. I've gotten no emails.
Right.
And I've asked around and I've heard nothing, no feedback, but there was supposed to be some January 4th event.
Yes.
Presumed to be a second unveiling of the Model 3. And I think I'm going to have to take a shift because they're killing me at the hospital. You've got to come on the 4th. You've got to come on. Nobody's working on the 4th. I think I'm going to be the only doctor in all of
you. And
all
you think
of
you. It's because of this Tesla event that none of your doctors are working on the 4th?
No, but I had asked for it off because I was thinking maybe I'd be flying up to Reno, but now I think I'm going to ditch.
Yeah, so, I don't know what's going on with that thing, but I want to go back and summarize. So the killer thing that you're worried about that you might want to flip your car another time for is battery range and speed, and you've said the same, battery range and speed. Batteries are going to get better all the time. There will be a 400-mile Tesla. There will be a 500-mile Tesla in time. But I think it's actually this thing that we're about to talk about in a minute, the speed of charging. So we'll get to that. Let me finish off with Model 3 news. And when are we going to see it? Because a lot of people are waiting. Lots of decisions are to occur. And this is from Electric! And they said Pacific Crest Brad Erickson says the Model 3 is indeed on track for second half of 2017. I don't know how he knows that.
Production.
According to calls that he's had and conversations he's had with the higher-ups at Tesla, that's where that information came from.
So he's a little worried about what that means for Model S and Model X sales, because if it really the people see, oh boy, this 3 really is coming soon, maybe they're going to have a dip in sales. I'm sure that's going to occur. But it's interesting that Jess and Dave, who just got their new Tesla, they went up to the factory and they picked it up. They said the thing that was remarkable is they saw all the X's coming off the line, they saw the S's, and it was wonderful, and they picked up their car. And it was just remarkable that how they would not talk about the Model 3. There was no prototypes, there was no discussion, nothing.
But when we went on our tour before the X came out, it was very, very similar, right? There was like an X behind a shrouded thing, and it was just like the framework of it. So that's not completely unusual. Now, this article talks about their production being ramped up, and that's why there are so many production vehicles right now available on the website. Like, there are 50 cars available right now on the website, about half and half S's and X's.
You mean 50 new cars that are built?
50 new cars that are like ready to go. Tesla has been ramping up their ready to go inventory for the end of the year so they can get on track to deliver that 80,000 cars. And my question to you gentlemen is, do you think they'll hit it? Now, we probably won't know until the Q1 call when they talk about the last production. But if I had to put you on the spot right now, do they hit 80,000 cars, Robert?
I don't think so.
Melvis?
Yes.
Ooh,
they will, because they were smart and saying free supercharging forever, and people like Robert and I jumped in.
But that means that you have to take delivery and pay it off in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people are still going to be pumped up in the first quarter. So I don't know that they're going to make the fourth quarter. But at the same time, they pushed out, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, I saw that they were saying, would you like your Tesla before the end of the year with only like 3 to 4 weeks lead time? So I think I know for a fact that they are pushing production very hard. I don't think they're going to meet that 80,000 mark, but somebody I work with, their offspring, I'm going to try and be as generic as possible. Their offspring works up in Fremont. They do something that has to do with the production line, and they're working literally 12-hour days, 6 days a week. And evidently, to get Christmas off, they had to work the day before 16 hours. So they are running that factory at a blazing speed to get out cars. And so maybe that is actually an indication that they're going to do good.
So let's move on, because They're going to build a lot of cars.
What about the defroster?
Oh, we've got to talk about the defroster very quickly. So there was just, I just found this little interesting thing on Teslarati. We love those guys. And it's by K-Man Auto that shows that, I didn't know this. Is this in every car? That for the front camera, there's a defroster and it's lots of snow. And in this video, he's showing that it sort of defrosts right over where the camera is. Is it in every car?
And the question that I have is it, do you have to turn it on or is it, does it auto detect? Because I saw the little orange lines on Dave and Jess's car, the little defroster lines painted in front of that camera.
So there was a further story where a guy used an infrared camera and looked at his car. And so when the car activates, right, the door handles pop open, the car immediately starts to defrost or at least heat up the glass over the three forward-facing cameras, the dual side cameras, right? You have a side camera in the badge on the front fender, and you have a side camera in the B pillar. Those defrost. I don't know about the rear-facing camera, because that one was a problem for me driving all through Colorado and Utah snow. And so we know for a fact that those all defrost, and as well, they took movies of the windshield wipers and they reach all the way across the camera window on the windscreen or the front windshield and clear that so that the cameras can see what's out there on the road.
I love Tesla Nation because it wouldn't come into my brain for a trillisecond to think, I should take my infrared camera out, go turn on my Tesla and see which cameras are going to get heated up.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it's because I don't live in a cold climate, but this is not something I was thinking about doing.
That's correct.
But it's fascinating little piece of information.
It's pretty cool.
So I want to talk about superchargers because of what we've been talking about. And I did a little bit of math and, you know, a couple of times have suggested, well, is there any money in building your own supercharger and having a little kiosk? So I went through some math and I'm going to try to do it really quickly because it's lots of numbers and they're probably wrong.
They're definitely wrong.
Let's assume you've got 10 cars a day that are going to come to Mel's supercharger and they're going to use about 50 kilowatts of energy. And let's say I charge the Tesla owners because I'm in the middle of nowhere, 30 cents per kilowatt hour, and I'm tied to the grid and I get 15 cents. I'm buying the electricity for 15 cents per kilowatt hour. You're going to have to trust me. This math is probably all wrong. But I think I can make about $30,000 a year by just charging Teslas. And I think it's going to cost me probably around $200,000 to set up this supercharger network.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if that's true, but looking at the solar panels, it would be about $130,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting the permits and stuff, let's just say it's around $200,000. Then the charge on a sort of a commercial loan for a $200,000 loan paid off over 10 years, which is most commercial loans at around 4%, is about $25,000. So I could, if my math is wrong, right, and it's not.
It's completely not, because you left out a bunch of stuff.
Like what?
The cost of the land, the cost of the actual superchargers.
Yes,
but
yes.
You also
left out. I put $70,000 in there for those things.
But you, did you?
Yeah.
Where are you putting the supercharger in Kansas?
Yeah, no, it's in the middle of nowhere. I can get the land cheap.
So the thing that you also didn't factor in is you could sell coffee, paninis,
that is the key.
All kinds of awesome stuff that you could sell, like keychains, little fob covers, selfie sticks, crap like that.
And I think that the perfect example would be Japanese rest stops. And I've been to Japan twice, and I've traveled around there for, I don't know, 6-7 weeks in total. And their rest stops are like Vendo heaven. And I put in some pictures into the notes.
Cool.
There's like these just pop-up vending machines. There's hundreds of them. Like, they'll sell you hot soup. They'll sell you drinks of all types.
You can get French fries freshly fried in vending machines in Japan.
There's beer. There's sake.
Beer.
That's
a great idea to rest up.
It's a brilliant idea.
It is for me.
Beer, sake, and get back in the car.
Because I'll say to my wife, I'm sorry, honey. I just had a beer. Could you drive for the next 3 hours? So I think that's an awesome – you can get one of these Japanese vending machine companies to stock you up and you'll be – in fact, just do it in Torrance. Just do it in Torrance where there's all those great Japanese supermarkets.
Yeah, and how much is land in Torrance?
Yeah, that's the problem. So the assumptions I've made there is you can buy the land pretty cheap and stuff, but I have no idea how much it is if I go to Tesla and I'm like, I'd like to have a four-stall supercharger. How much is that going to cost? They don't actually publish that, but I'd like to know. I'm just saying – it's theoretically possible within some constraints for you to own your own supercharger, but you're going to have to sell a lot of paninis to make a profit.
That's true, but you're also only saying that's 10 cars a day. I mean, the likelihood of you being able to charge more. The key is, obviously, to put it in a place where a supercharger is not.
Yeah, well, don't do it in Green River, Utah. I was there for like 24 hours, and I was the only one at the supercharger, and I could see it from my hotel room. But then again, it was the first supercharger that I have seen on the map that didn't have the typical supercharger red little drop logo. It had the exclamation point logo. And so it's the only supercharger between Grand Junction, Colorado, and I think it's Richmond or Beaver, Utah. So this is a long stretch, like a 400-mile stretch. And we're cruising along, and I'm like, okay, the next stop is Green River. And I look at the map, and I was like, what's that exclamation point? I think that means badness. And so I get on the phone with Tesla from Grand Junction, and the guy's like, oh, yes, we have it marked as offline. I was like, what? Uh-oh. There's like no options. You're stuck. So I said, what does this mean? He says, well, the supercharger's working fine. And in fact, I looked on PlugShare, and on PlugShare, there's plenty of people who say it's marked as offline, but I stopped there and I charged. And some of those were like just days before I was showing up. And so what the Tesla guy told me was that the Rocky Mountain Power Company, bastards, have not been supplying the supercharger with a reliable stream of electricity. How is that possible? So anyway, I get there.
Bags.
Exactly. So I get there and we plug in and it's late at night and we're hungry and we want to go check into the hotel, but I'm like, no, wait, let's just try it. And bam, the thing is blazing, right? Like 350 miles an hour, 112 kilowatt hour, kilowatt, giving me many kilowatt hours. And so it basically almost filled up the car. And so we go, we have dinner. It was fine. And I put it on PlugShare. And the next morning I thought, well, I'm just going to take an extra 10 minutes for Talking Tesla Nation and drive across the street from the hotel. And there's actually a museum there, the Powell History Museum, about John Wesley Powell, who was the first explorer to really like raft down the Green River, the Virgin River, the Colorado River. I mean, it's fascinating and a really excellent museum. Okay. And I'm pretty critical on museums. This was excellent.
Nice.
And so
pro tip,
we plugged back in and guess what? I was getting 30 miles of charge per hour. It was like a regular NEMA 1450 wall plug.
Same charger outlet or different charger outlet?
I moved
outlet.
Between two different chargers. Mm-hmm. There was only four of them there.
Right.
And I was like, wow, this thing. And the car was cold, granted. And it did warm up. It went from like, whatever, initially 22 to like 36 miles. But that was it. It topped out. And it was most likely this power company jacking around with Tesla. And I think that, I guess there's not that many people who live there. It's only a town of like 1,200 people.
And it's snowy, so it's not really open to being one of those ones with solar panels potentially, because he talked about not putting those in.
Well, we're
going to
talk
areas.
About that now. So this is from Electric! And it was a series of tweets from Elon's in the last few days, and it was instigated by Fred Lambert of Electric, so thanks to Fred. So he said, you know, why don't you have more solar arrays on superchargers? And Elon said this, well, you know, with the rollout of Supercharger version 3 and Power Pack 2, then we're going to be able to do a lot more of this. It's all coming together, right? And then Fred said, now, hang on a second here. Supercharger version 3.0, could that have like even faster charging, like 350 kilowatts? And then fired back to Fred is 350 kilowatts. What are you talking about, a child's toy? So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this little exchange between Fred and the Elon suggests, one, you're going to see a lot more solar arrays. These are going to be connected to PowerPack 2, which now have 200 kilowatt hours of storage. And this technology, it appears, is going to allow the Elon and the Musks and the people
Please
at the
stop
Teslas.
Doing that. People hate that.
oh, we'll get to that. The ability to do faster than 350 kilowatts, and Fred did some math and I did some math, it could be that you could get 70 kilowatt hours into your car in 6 minutes, making it almost as fast as filling up your gasoline car. And this goes back to what you were saying before. Can they do that with current battery technology or not? But this is huge. They are planning on super fast charging, which Strobel talked about 4 years ago.
Right.
Fully charge the car in 5 minutes.
And the interesting thing is PowerPack necessary for that, because then the power is all there. Like they take the grid power, which maybe is somewhat unreliable, as you as you just spoke of, and they fill these power packs, and maybe they have 20 or 30 of them in a site, which is a very expensive sort of install, obviously.
Right.
But maybe because of the technology, the inverter technology within the power pack, they can release more power quicker, and that's what's going to enable them to do the larger speeds. Like, they couldn't necessarily do that in a straight grid transformer inverter system, but the power pack, too, maybe has something to do with that.
And they may be working on capacitor technology so that the charger station can amass a huge amount of power. I wouldn't want this to be in an area with a lot of lightning. And that power can then get pushed into the car very quickly. Of course, if you try and suck a lot of power at once off the grid, they have these, I don't know if it's opportunity charges. So in commercial electricity systems, you not only pay for the electricity, but you pay for your peak demand, which is quite a bit more expensive, I'm told. And so this is likely going to be a economic benefit to stack, 10 power packs or more at a supercharger station. Unfortunately, it is going to take up quite a few more parking spaces or space around. So it makes it more challenging for Tesla to locate superchargers. But I'm looking forward to this. And if it is indeed the power, that big surge of power is going to come to your car from a battery, it's going to go DC into your car. DC is what has not limited the car at this point. So maybe there's a chance that all of these Teslas can take a higher DC flow rate.
And this goes back to our earlier conversation where we talked about what is the battery technology going to be the limitation to that. So let's say you pull up to a supercharger that has 500 kilowatts, but you're in your current Tesla. You need the new battery to really take that. That's gonna get you to, if you're like, oh, my car will supercharge in 6 minutes versus 30 minutes, you're gonna upgrade your car for that alone.
Yeah, if you're driving a lot, it might make a difference. And it'll all be about cost. But yeah, I'm so fascinated by this. What would you have to do in a battery to allow it to accept that much charge? Because it's been about heating, right? It's been about overheating. You shovel those electrons in too fast, it gets too hot. So there'll have to be some sort of cooling system. Right, I don't know how this is going to work.
There'll be a cooling system, the battery technology. Again, if it's sort of about what's the real full top capacity of these batteries. If the batteries are smaller, lighter, they can put more of them in there, which gives them more of that overhead capacity that they don't have to use. And that will make that quick charging faster and safer.
Right. So that was one way that people were doing it. You put in a 150 kilowatt battery, so you're only charging it up a half of what you really, its full capacity. That way you could do it faster. That's very interesting. And then later on, say, hey, Tom, you know how you've been charging up really fast in your car? That's cool. Would you like another 100 kilowatts? Because it's been there the whole time. Give us 10 grand.
And maybe that's it. Like maybe you pull up to a supercharger and you get 200 miles in 6 minutes. But if you wait an hour, your car can get 400 miles.
Oh my gosh, the endless series of possibilities.
Thank you, Fred, for getting Elon to
Fred, that was interesting.
Cough this up.
I think that's real. This is fascinating to me. So then somebody was asking, well, like in Australia or in somewhere where you get lots of sun, but you don't really have a grid system, if you have the power packs, could these be fully offline? And Elon's response was, yeah, if you've got enough energy, solar energy there, we put a couple of power packs up, we could start putting these where there's basically off-grid. And that's really cool for places where the electricity grid is not very good. I'm starting to think about Model 3s in other countries.
It just depends, again, on how many cars are going to come through a given supercharger in a particular day, how much capacities these power packs are really going to have. Are they going to have 100 kilowatt hours and then you pull up and you're going to draw 70 kilowatt hours? How long does it take for the power packs to recharge? So it's like if you're in the Tejon Ranch supercharger, right, that has, what, 8 or 9 stalls and there's typically a line of cars, you'd need a shit ton power packs,
yes,
right, to manage that level of traffic.
Yes, but it can be done.
Yeah.
And, they sell the power packs for what is it, 100? Power pack 2 is something like $100,000 for a 200 kilowatt thing, but they probably make them for significantly less than that. So, you know.
Well, they had to build a factory, so they got to factor the cost, the opportunity cost of building.
And we'll talk about that. That's getting pretty darn big, too.
Boy, this is going to be a really long episode. Do I care? Does anybody care? Apparently, nobody cares. We're going to be going here for hours. Tom's got stuff to do,
and you've
got
to go to work.
Yeah. But here, let's move quickly here. Grandpa's got a solution. I was talking to my father-in-law, and he was starting to say, well, maybe I should wait and see what's going on with Model 3 instead of getting the Bolt. And then we were talking about full autonomy. I'm like, yeah, boy, you might even have to not drive the thing, which would be pretty cool. And then we were talking about service centers, and he's like, well, you know, a fully autonomous future, he's an engineer from Hughes, you wouldn't even know that your car's getting serviced, because I would go to bed at 10, my car drives down to the service center at 11, and it gets serviced and fixed, and then it drives back a couple of hours later, and I wake up, and I didn't even know my car went to the service center, and I'm thinking, that's fantastic. Except, you know, I don't want to be the dude that has to do the night shift, but
right.
That's a great way to fix this service center issue. You just have it running 24/7 and the car's coming and
it does. And when I originally saw this, I was like, that's not so genius. Like, who wants to staff an entire night shift at service centers? But then you really think about it, like, there's a lot of people out there who want jobs. There's a lot of people out there that maybe want some flexibility. Why aren't car shops, like, if you have a busy car shop and you own a really busy, very well-respected car shop, and you call and your customers call you and you're like, oh, I can't get to that car for 3 or 4 days. Why wouldn't you hire a second shift of guys to go in there? It makes no sense. I think your father may have just revolutionized automobile service centers and potentially the job market just with a little offhanded comment
over a beer at the pub.
Genius.
Absolutely genius. And, you know, I think 20-25% of the U.S. population already does shift work. And you can ask Robert over here, although you just don't do nights anymore. So this is just an industry thing. If there is the demand, here's a way to fix it. And then what will happen is that the robots will get so smart, then you won't need the humans there overnight and everybody can sleep.
Right.
It's just a precursor to us traveling in space, right? Why would there be any shift restrictions when you're on your way to Mars for 6 months, right? You might as well have people working 24/7, just 3 shifts of 8, and you keep things going. You got to make sure the spaceship's fueled, right? And the gadgets and widgets are working, right?
Well, there'll always have to be somebody on duty, right?
To
watch for the Martians coming towards
They're going to need a coffee, right? So there's going to be a barista to do some pulling of the Doppio espresso. And so you need to have
Because they can't robotize coffee making.
No.
We've talked about battery degradation on this show and on many shows, and the Tesla, the degradation has been really, really slow, like 5% over 100,000 miles, numbers we're getting like that. And then Cora asked the question, somebody in Cora.com asked the question, do batteries degrade over time? And the answer that was given was yes, but it wasn't actually a very good answer. But the person who was answering it said, but just remember, batteries may degrade over time, but you know, ICE vehicles degrade over time. The mileage you get in your ICE car significantly degrades over time as well.
And then there was a commenter who talked about what the reasoning behind that, you know, like there's all sorts of things that go wrong, valves sort of start to have issues, seals start to go, things that don't need fixing on Teslas or other electric cars, they just go and things start to work less efficient.
Loss of compression.
Correct.
Loss of compression. That was my Pantera. I had a Pantera. It was 10,
really?
10 or 13
you
years
had
old.
A Pantera?
I did, a 1971 Pantera with a
so hot
350 Ford.
Did you have long flowing hair also when you were driving your Pantera around and like a Rush t-shirt on?
Probably would have been the only way I could have heard Rush was in my mind wearing the t-shirt, because the engine sat, the forward part of the engine with the belts, sat in this bump out into the passenger compartment. It sat out about a foot plus. And when you rev the engine, there was I still have hearing loss on my right ear probably from driving that car. And so we had to tear the entire engine down to get the performance back only after, 12,000 miles and 10 years. It was kind of crazy. So,
sweet looking car. What color was your Pantera, if you don't mind me asking?
Yellow.
Oh, of course it was.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you do a Google search for 1971 Pantera, like 90% of the things that come up.
That's it right there.
Is that you in there?
No, go down. That's it.
Oh, there it is.
Original Di Tommaso wheels.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was a piece of shit.
Where was the Pantera made? Do we know?
In Pantera land.
It's an Italian car with a Ford 350
and an Italian sports car,
German 5-speed differential that sat behind the engine. It was sort of a cross differential. It was a really nice car, but it was loud. It got crappy gas mileage. It handled like shit because it had radial. It didn't have really good tires. It had a crappy suspension. Whoever's out there and you love your Pantera, I'm with you, man. I've been through every inch of that car. I know it backwards and forwards, and my Model S can beat the crap out of it.
So where is that Pantera today? Because do you know how much the Pantera is worth right now?
All I know is that I spent a year tearing that thing down and rebuilding it and ended up selling it for a loss, and I'm very sad.
There is a 1971 Di Tommaso Pantera for sale in Scottsdale, Arizona, $130,000.
Well, I guess
you should have kept it
30 years.
You could have traded it for an S.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Future Faraday from Electric. Look, we've been following this news very closely the last month or so.
Future Faraday? Is that what you called it?
Future Faraday Future. And so this is a Chinese-backed company which is going to make electric cars that are going to be faster. And they keep teasing these videos of their new car. And it's going to be faster than a Tesla Model S. Ludicrous. And two more high-level executives this week have left. One was the former CEO of Ferrari.
Wah, wah, wah.
The other one was a VP of product marketing at VW. They only came on like a year ago and they're gone. And so the guy that has the cash, whose name I can't pronounce, Jaya Yuding,
Yeting.
It looks like he is now in charge. He's saying, look, I've still got lots of money. We've got $600 million in new cash that's coming along. But it's still not clear to me whether this car is ever going to make it to market. They're going to show it at CES.
Yeah.
But it seems like the rats are jumping off the sinking ship. And I'm not happy about this. I want this car to be great, and I want it to work, and I want more electric cars. But what the hell is happening to this company?
I don't know.
We don't know.
It seems like some bad things are going on. There's definitely some money issues. What I read in this article is what it is Faraday Future, and I don't know if this is true, is really two companies. One of the companies is a manufacturing company, and the other company owns the intellectual property. And so if you've invested in Faraday, you don't own the intellectual property side of this. It's a completely different company that's not part of the deal. So that may have been the CEO and the VP guys that bailed may have just thought that that was a little bit of them gaming the system on some levels to investors, and they didn't want to be sort of part of that situation because, as you know, in a technology company, intellectual property is where the money is.
That's right, and that's where all the future is, all those patents. I don't know. I want to just send out some good karma. I would appreciate if Tesla Nation comes with me. Send out good karma to Faraday. I don't want to see them fail. I want to see them be successful. Yes, I don't quite agree with them going for the crazy speed over just a good car for the public to move us off of petrol.
Although I do have a question about that, because we have talked about this in the past, and I wonder if would the normal, like if they came out with just a Model 3 type competitor, and would the normal person trust that enough? Because right, they can't afford to have a car that has all kinds of problems, where the rich guy buying the $150,000 car can sort of deal with the issues, which we've talked about many times as far as a Tesla goes. But for me, as a person, like would I run out and be like, oh, I'm gonna be the first guy to buy the 300-mile mass market version of a car company that hasn't existed otherwise? I don't know that I would. I'm not sure. So maybe that they have no choice, and maybe they did that market analysis.
And Tesla's genius may be also that we created super fast, super sexy, super expensive cars, and now Tesla is something that people aspire to. I want a super sexy, beautiful car.
Yeah.
Then you create your lower cost one, and people still associate sexy, wonderful Tesla with that. If they had have led with, they couldn't. But if they had have led with a mass market car, it wouldn't be sexy to just be a mass market car.
I just want to counter you. I don't think Teslas are super expensive. For what you get, I think they're actually a reasonably priced car. They are not the Ferrari 488 GTB, which they put this Faraday Future car up against. That's the $250,000 mid-engine two-seater Ferrari that's, Car and Driver's top exotic car. So, I think Tesla is actually amazing. It's faster than million-dollar production cars. And so I think that they're probably following in Tesla's footprints for the same reasons.
But it's not just about speed, right? I mean, like, it's about – Ferrari's about the sexiness. It's about that throaty sound. It's about all kinds of things. But another, what I'll tell you about the Tesla thing and what just popped into my head is what other ginormous company did almost that exact same model? It was Apple, right? When Apple first came out, those computers – and they still are – much more expensive, but they're not 3, 4, 5 times factor expensive that they used to be when they first came out. Like, if you were early on in the Apple thing, those computers were expensive, the RAM was expensive, and that didn't necessarily, they weren't necessarily doing that to drive the other. But now everybody, because of that, all of the hipsters and all of the graphic designers did that. It made everybody covet it. And when they finally came out with something affordable, the iPhone, the iPods, the iPads, people wanted them and they sold a
lot of time. Oh, gosh.
Come on,
hey,
Melvis.
Look, I'm going to just jump us way further forward because I know Robert's got to go to work and Tom's got stuff to do. And I've got a whole bunch of stuff about renewables, which is not time sensitive. We can talk about it later. I do want to talk about the Gigafactory and then do the letters.
Oh.
Because Engadget has some fresh drone footage of what the Gigafactory looks like right now. It's about 30% complete and it is huge.
It's very big.
It's grown so much even in the last few months. And the way I determine how big it is by how big the cars look next to it. And the cars that are parked next to the factory looking smaller and smaller as the factory gets bigger
and,
bigger.
As you watch the drone fly around towards the south side, there's a staircase that leads, an exterior staircase. It's temporary scaffolding that leads to the roof. It doesn't go up and back. It doesn't go up and back and up and back. It goes up and back and up and back so many times. It's like huge. This building is so tall. It is so large. And compared to the Gigafactory that I saw when I went to the Gigafactory event this summer, the three buildings that I walked through are now dwarfed by the additional five buildings that have been put on top of or next to them.
It is the alien dreadnought of large buildings growing ridiculously fast. I'm so excited about it. Look, let's do letters.
Let's do them. We had a lot of letters.
We have a lot of letters, and the first one is really interesting. So, and this is an anonymous letter.
Anonymous? Is this our first anonymous
letter? First anonymous letter, and here is the reason. I'm talking about Falcon Wing doors and how do you manually open them. And the message is there's a manual pull cable behind the speaker grill on the inside of the Falcon Wing door.
Very cool. So you pull that little grill off and inside is a little cable and you pull on that and that releases the door, but you still have to lift it up.
So a number of people have asked this and actually a few other people came up with the answer as well in a different way. But this person says, I love the show. My anonymity is required by the company I work for. Hmm. And Cece asked the question, is this Elon Musk listening to the show? I'm sure it is. It couldn't possibly be anybody else.
Wow, that is speculation upon speculation upon speculation.
In these current political climate, that's what you do.
Maybe it's
you
Obama.
You make stuff up.
Maybe
could
it's Obama.
Could be Obama, but I'm pretty sure it's Elon. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the next letter is from Matt Ladder. But he says it's Ladder
actually,
with an extra ER. So is that Ladderer?
That is correct. That's exactly what he said, actually, in his thing. My last name is pronounced like the word ladder with an extra ER at the end, so it's either Ladder Emergency Room or it's Ladderer.
I just want to step back a second. Sorry, Matthew, for stealing your thunder. But if you saw, there was an acronym in that quote anonymous email that said RTFM.
Yes.
Did you bother to look that up?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Did you know what it means? To look it up, Robert?
Yes, I did. Read the fucking manual.
Oh, that's who? How dare you? Why would I read the manual when I could have the talking Tesla people tell me what to do?
One of these letters talked about the first responder PDF,
yes,
which I downloaded.
Wonderful.
That has so much information in it. It is amazing.
We're going to get to that. Yes, yeah, somebody found that PDF that says, here's when you're a firefighter and you come across as a crash, here's all the things you need to know. It is absolutely
jam-packed with information.
Now I know where, when I get the jaws of life, where to cut my car open without wrecking all the internal battery
staying
stuff.
Away from the high voltage, which that's is very
maybe
important.
We should spend more time on the Tesla website and less on electric.
I like electric. I do not want to spend any time reading manuals. I want somebody else, like these people, to just tell me what to do. I'm not reading them. Matt Ladderer, Yes, there's an ER on the ER. He says, how much does it cost to get a high-speed commercial EV charger? He did some Googling. They're trying to get one at their work, and I did the same thing. I don't know what's the right one. He's like, is there a good one? Is there a bad one?
In other words, is there a Consumer Reports for commercial installation of a charging facility?
Couldn't find one. I did find a lot of stuff about, you know, when I got a new charger for my grandfather's place, that we're comparing sort of residential chargers, how which one is the best one. And there's a lot of sites that have done some comparing, and don't buy the expensive one, because it turns out when they do their reviews that a lot of these inexpensive ones, the $350 level two chargers, are just as good as the much more expensive ones. So Corey
Bowling.
Has a couple of questions. Well, actually, he has a couple of statements, and he says, you know, what do you think about Tesla venturing into solar windows glass in the future? And he gives us a couple of links, but this link is about quantum dots of solar cells. I don't know what a quantum dot is, but I'm pretty sure it's small. Yeah. But the idea is that you can put these things into windows, into glass, and generate electricity. It's very sci-fi. And what about Tesla solar shingles being used for other applications like siding and patios? And I say, yes, I've always wanted this, and I think it makes logical sense. Don't just put this stuff in my roof. Mm-hmm. Put it in every part of my house, the siding and the awnings and everywhere that there's sun for a reasonable part of the day.
As soon as it's available, Mel, I'm going to get you a solar toilet seat.
Because the sun shines out of my buttocks. Apparently, is what he's saying.
Wow, that is good. I didn't put that thing together. And then Corey also gave us a link to the DOE's official podcast, Direct Current, and he says it's very well produced. I'm going to take a listen. Again, Talking Tesla Nation, educating the Talking Tesla folks.
The hosts, the people that...
The hosts.
Oh, we're idiots.
Oh, that's a good name, hosts. That's what we should call ourselves.
Direct Current. Yeah, I'm going to listen to that. I haven't had a chance yet, and I'm hoping it'll actually do lots of good explainers about all of this stuff, because I need some splaining, that's for sure.
Yeah, it looks like they started it up this year. They've got, let's see, I think 8 episodes, and the last one is called Ho Ho How Holiday Lights Work.
Oh, so... Gonna watch it. Here's the next one. Mike Deaver, who's talking about green investing, and he gives us a stock tip here of one that is totally divested from fossil fuels, and says it's actually in the last year done really well. It's done 2% better than the S&P 500. I've got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I have been spending a lot of time thinking about this, whether I'm going to really go busy and divest. And having watched what is happening with Exxon and other oil companies and the way their disinformation campaigns, I'm really quite fired up about doing this, because if you go onto the Exxon site, they've got a statement about global warming. It says, yeah, global warming's a problem, and it's man-made, and it's a big deal. And then if you look at who they then fund, they fund these third-party groups that spend their time denying climate change.
Assholes.
And I'm thinking, wow, this is exactly what the tobacco industry did, because the tobacco industry knew that the science was in and that they were going to get sued if they continued to have these statements saying that they didn't know that tobacco was bad for you. But they funded the same thing, third-party groups that would then do all their climate denying for them. This is the most unethical, horrible freaking industry, and I'm going to fully divest, because if 1 cent of my money is going to help these bastards out, I'm going to be very sad. So thank you for the stock tip. I don't know what stocks to buy. I'm going to get divested as fast as I can. I'm done.
That reminds me of an excellent documentary. I think you may have mentioned that, Mel, called Merchants of Doubt.
And as I first heard about that book, which Elon was talked about on one of the shows, and it is an excellent book. It's that when I say it's the same people that ran the disinformation campaign for the tobacco industry and lots of other bad industries, it's the same people that are doing it for climate denying.
And while I will definitely agree with you, we should try to divest as much as possible. This show is not providing stock tips to anybody out there. And we just want to make it very clear. What may or may not work for us may or may not work for you. Do your due diligence when making financial decisions for yourself.
I've made it the statement many times. You would have to have a CAT scan if you're the kind of person that would listen to us about stock tips. Just as a general concept, I'm talking to you. Keith Lang says, I would love to make a Going Zero logo for you. So I emailed Keith. I haven't heard back, but Keith, if you're out there, I'd love to see what you can come up with for the Going Zero logo.
And is this his new moniker now, Keither?
Keither.
Keither.
Well, that's Australian, mate. Keither. Or maybe it's New Zealand way of saying
maybe
Keith.
All of our Keith. Listeners just are getting an ER added to the end of their names.
Yeah, why not just call him Bruce?
So Trevor Page is another person who says, Mel, I can tell you how you can open up your Falcon Wing doors. And he went further than that, though. Here is the guy, I think he does the Model 3 show. Yeah, he's the Model 3 Owners Club founder. He has a YouTube channel, does a lot of great explainers. So he tells me how to open the door. But then he says this, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. He got his Lego set.
He broke out the Legos?
It was so cool. I watched this video. It's amazing. He built a door.
He built a Falcon Wing door out of Legos to show you how it articulates. It's really good. I suggest you go check it out.
And he was the one who posted the first responder PDF EMS. As well. So, Trevor, well done.
Yeah, if you want to get deep into how the sort of the routing of the electricity and stuff occurs in a Tesla, this model, this EMS guide is really important.
I recommend anybody with an X look at this, because when you get asked, you know, you're in the parking lot, people are like, oh, your Model X, that's so nice, but it's dangerous because of this, it's dangerous because of that, you know, all the BS that they hear in the news. Well, then be informed. No. It's actually safer. This is how the Falcon Wing doors work. It's a passive spring that opens the doors. It doesn't require any electricity. It's just a latch, etc. Just read it. It's a really great little manual. It shows me that Tesla's so doing their homework.
John from Colorado has a subject line that says, the phrasing that is goofy. Uh-oh. Dear fine folks of the Tesla that is talking, I believe you have jumped the shark that is with the phrasing that is goofy. Maybe in the California, people speak like this, but I can assure you that people who live east of the Grand, that is Canyon, do not. I don't think you need to edit out the words that are swearful, but please edit out the phrasing that is awkward. It's getting annoying. But screaming electric is not. Please do not. And he also suggests that you guys are doctors. You've got 60 episodes under your belt, and you still can't tell the difference between kilowatt hours and kilowatts. Come on. But the most important part of the letter
Wait a minute. No, I don't think this is the most important part.
By the way, Mel is the smart one. Tom may have some more facts and insight, but everything sounds more impressive in an Aussie accent. Thank you,
within
John.
Within his own sentence, he diffuses what he said. He calls you the smart one, but only because of your silly, silly accent. I have more facts and insight.
22 million Australians
insight,
are pissed
Mel,
at you right now. It's beautiful.
Insight.
I'm going to work on my accent.
The Brian that is Anderson. No, don't
stop
start.
It. Don't.
Brian Anderson said that he loved the Going Zero prototype. And he said, you got a quote from Carl Sagan. And then on my Facebook profile, I swear I didn't change it. But there was no link to his Facebook profile. So I assume there's a Carl Sagan picture or something in his Facebook profile.
Yeah.
Trent Eddy is got a really nice letter here that basically says there are people working on without the animals.
Vegetarian burgers.
Well, no, meat not created directly from animals. So you basically grow the meat in a lab instead of growing it in a cow. And Sergey Brin's foundation is part of this. So you can actually have meat, but it's not from the killing of cows. And somebody said,
I want a Brin burger in my In-N-Out trip.
But and then I thought, it's not a Brin burger, it's a Brin-N-Out burger.
Oh, very nice.
Very nice.
But the thing that I'm curious about, and I've had many conversations with you off the air, and we won't get into that because that is the thing about genetically modified, you know, food stuffs, right? This is clearly what that would be.
Yes.
And so where would you stand in this particular situation?
I have no problem with genetically modified food. In fact, all food is genetically modified. The Indians have been genetically modifying corn for thousands of years. I think it's a really important thing to save many lives is to have genetically modified food. I don't know why people are so wigged out about it.
I don't either, but we've had those conversations where people...
I think it's a great idea. Well, listen, guys, I'm going to have to depart because it is my hour to go to work. And I'm going to let you finish the letters, and I made some other comments.
Don't
Feel
leave.
Free to plagiarize me.
Oh, we will.
Yeah, please.
No
but
credit given.
Before I leave, I was at this amazing place in Arizona. I kind of told you a little bit about it, called Arcosante. This was our first night on the trip, and this is a place created by Paolo Solari, who's an Italian architect who coined the term arcology. That's architecture and ecology. So merging the two into a going zero-like sustainable community. And at this community, they make these amazing devices, which I'm not going to reveal, but I bought each one of you.
Oh,
whoa. Should we open it here on the show?
You can definitely
it
here.
You always bring us stuff. I never give anybody anything. I'm a bad person.
I have a thing for both of you, but it's just
Well, this will inspire you to look more into Arcosante.
It's a lovely
box.
Lovely it is box. Very and nicely patterned. There's a note inside.
There's notes.
Oh, that's a private note from Robert. Thank you so very much. I'm very excited to see that. And then, inside.
What a good opening up. This is really great radio. We were getting really good at these unboxings.
I'm going to tweet a picture of you opening the box.
What is this?
Or maybe a picture of Tom holding up what's in the box.
Lovely. This first part of it is beautiful. My
it's a little
really
dingy-ling.
I love this. I think there's maybe more to it in the box. But the first part, it's this lovely bell with some beautiful symbols on it. And it makes, actually, it's a lovely tone. I like
Not
it.
A nice tone.
It's got a nice, really nice patina already on it. This is going to look so lovely in my back garden, Robert, and I really, really
Thank
appreciate
you, Robert.
That. Thank you so much.
I'm going to have to find something in the new that is for you guys. I'm going to bring you back hobbit.
That or a sheep, I guess. I'm getting something from Tom. What is this?
That's a
three old vine Zinfandel from Contra Costa County.
One of my favorite Zinfandels. I buy it by the truckload. I drink it by the busload.
Before you drive to work?
I'm going to have to get myself some fake Brin burger and enjoy this.
Oh, there you go. Happy holidays and have a safe shift, my friend.
Thank you, boys.
See ya.
Another killer 12.
Well, now that he's gone, now we can have some real fun.
Oh, my God. I thought
Let's
he would never leave.
Shit about him.
Jeez, what a loser.
What a nerd.
Okay. Christopher Jones talks about Jar Jar Binks. And he says, look, I love the show, which makes it strange that my first message to be to you would be about would not be about my favorite topic, Tesla, but rather about Jar Jar Binks. Apparently, Tom was hating on the Binks. And he sends us a little video here that shows quite, I think, clearly that Jar Jar Binks is, in fact, a Sith Lord. We'll put the link in the show notes. You got to go check it out. It changes everything the way you think about Jar Jar Binks. Right?
Yeah, sure it does.
You still find him annoying?
Well,
he's super powerful. It could be the
he
most
is
powerful
annoying.
Lord.
That doesn't mean that he can't be the most powerful Sith, although, you know, it's not actually possible, I don't believe, for him to be a Sith because there can only be two Siths at one time and there are two other Siths in that movie. But, you know, I digress.
John Ford sends us another note, which is John is our favorite climate denier. And John sends us a note that says, you know, looks like we're spending a tremendous amount of other people's money for no benefit. And he links us to an article here that says we're spending lots and lots of money and it doesn't look like this is going to modify the amount of temperature rise very much. And I actually read the exact opposite into you than you did, John, which is, yeah, we know we're doing an inefficient, we're not doing enough for this problem. We have to go full bore to reduce the amount of warming that we're going to occur. So I read this and I say, more to be done, much more.
Right. So he says we're spending tremendous amount of other people's money for no benefit when we could be taking care of poor people, which I totally agree with. But again, my interpretation is exactly like yours. It's like we want to do 100%, but the political system in the world will only let us do 25%. So some people's takes on that are, let's not do anything because we can't do enough anyways. And that's just ridiculous. Let's just push them even farther, in my opinion. But thank you, John. I did read it. I learn a lot to support my claims.
And the next letter is from Jess Delahite. And Jess says, he wrote us a letter a number of weeks ago where he had his flip-flops, he had his new car, and he kind of crashed it.
And you call him a woman. He's a man.
He's a man. Sorry, Jess. And he's got this big, long article here that basically, in summary, says this. There was a perfect storm brewing because he had his car, and he crashed it, and it needed to get fixed. And it took, I think he said, 3 months for it to get come back because nobody could do the aluminum bodywork that was required. Because he's in Texas, and he's saying, like, this is a big deal. You guys are always worried about your stupid superchargers, but it's bodywork for all the crashes that are going to occur from all the Model 3s that are out
there.
And the only thing that makes me feel a little bit better about this is that the Model 3 is going to have a steel construction, which every body shop should be able to fix. That for the fender bender stuff, that the Model 3 is going to be much easier.
A lot of it just depends on Tesla's ability to make and stock spare fenders, spare all of this other stuff. So if you're in a situation where it's more than just a minor little bump and you can't fix it like the normal traditional way and you got to replace it, that Tesla can actually provide those parts on time. Because it seemed like that was the biggest issue, was that for him was he's in Texas, so there's only two certified repair shops in all of Dallas-Fort Worth, which is a very large area, and it's difficult for Tesla to provide the parts.
John Ford sends us another climate-denying article, but this one is about Dr. Roy Spencer, and he says you should read his stuff because he's a naysayer about climate change. Roy Spencer is a well-known scientist within the community who is a climate denier, who is paid for by the Heartland Institute, funded by the gas and fuel industry. He is known for screwing up his data on multiple occasions and basically being a patsy for these guys. So Roy Spencer, he'd be a loser, John. He'd be a big loser. And if I'll show you, for every one scientist that you bring me, I'll bring you approximately 98 others that say they're wrong.
And it's not necessarily that Dr. Roy Spencer is denying climate change or that John is denying climate change. They're denying that the humans are having the mass amount or percentage of that particular impact, because again, the Earth has gone through climate cycles without us
Absolutely.
In the past, without all of this carbon and stuff in the past. But you know, the scientific community, like the jury is no longer out on this particular one.
Yeah, it's not even close.
But thanks for still listening, John. We appreciate it, and we appreciate your support of Tesla as a car company.
Mike, can I go back to the playbook? The playbook here, it's well defined by the tobacco industry and others. Is first you say nothing's happening. Then you say, oh, there could be something happening. This is all to give you extra time to make more profit. Then you say, oh, well, it's a mix of things. Yes, we're having some bad effect, but we're not sure. And you keep playing this out so that even though you know the actual truth, you give yourself decades to make more profit. It is cynical. It is horrible. I'm done here. Leo K talks about solar energy, and he says, I've got a small solar array, but I note that I can't put on a bigger solar array as I'd like. We really need governments to produce clean energy so that I can buy it from them or utilities. And that is true, but
he's talking specifically about charging his car using solar because the cars require so much, you know, energy.
Yeah, so if you're driving a lot, you can more than double your energy requirements by getting an electric car. So that is true. But what I found out is that this community solar thing is really starting to take off. And I've got an interview on Wednesday with a community solar group, is where Tom says, well, I can't put solar panels because I live in an apartment, but I'd like to buy my energy purely renewable. Well, this group, as I understand it, is building solar panels so that you can then buy your energy from them through some complicated process where you actually don't go off the current energy that you're using right now. And I'm going to try and have them explain it to me.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Andre Rodriguez is sent us a link about solar roads. Now, solar roads are big in the news. You see them all the time because the idea is that there's a lot of wasted space. There's roads everywhere. If we could put solar panels down there, then we could use all this space and not have to build solar farms. The problem with these solar roads is it looks like they're fairly inefficient. They're very expensive. I think that they're probably going to be failed. These are a number of ones in France and other places that they're trying out. I think it makes more sense to have a normal road and then put up solar trees along the way.
Yeah.
But we will see their testing. We'll see.
Although it's hard to know, right? Like if they come down in price, let's say 20-fold, right? Or and they're super cheap and it costs, let's say, as much to repave the roads over a 25-year period because maybe they last longer. Who knows? I mean, let's just say, for instance, they're inefficient, but they become super cheap. There's a lot of that space available. So maybe in 100 years, you know, it's one of those things where, like, it's a kind of a wait-and-see situation. So it's good that people are kind of looking into it. As of right now, it's not even close to being in the conversation.
And Matthias?
Matthias Chope.
Chop. He sent us a link, and I don't remember.
Chop. It's Chop. Matthias Chop.
I don't remember actually clicking on this link, but it's about going zero in houses, self-sufficient house. I didn't read it. I'm sorry. Oh, no, I did. It's an apartment complex. That's right. So it's a really interesting apartment complex, which has zero emissions. It's not even attached to the grid. So they've got a solar roof. They've got solar walls. They've got super low energy appliances. They've got batteries, which can give them 4 days of energy. And they say they can run this entire apartment complex on just 1 hour of sunlight a day, and they get over 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So it's a good reminder to me that reducing consumption by being super energy efficient is as least important, probably more important than energy production.
Much more important, actually, because we are super inefficient. And I am today, as I leave here, this is what I had to do. You've been talking through this whole show. Tom's got something to do.
What are you doing?
I am going to look at new windows for my home to double or triple the current efficiency of my windows. And then I'll be able to report to you in, you know, over the months, you know, after I get them installed as to what that's actually done for my utility bills.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this because I live in a classic California ranch style house and it is so energy inefficient. It leaks like a sieve. I spend a lot of energy trying to heat it when it's cold.
But you already have double pane windows. I do not currently have double pane windows on my home. So like my windows are very cold. Like if I sleep next to a large window in my house, oh my God, it is freezing cold. And I don't feel any of that when I'm by your windows. And I want some of that.
Now, the only problem we've had with our double pane windows is that the gas leaked in some of them. So you've got to be careful of the manufacturer. How do you pronounce this gentleman's name? Is it
Diedrich?
Diedrich?
Diedrich.
Diedrich says, I'm your other black listener.
You said we had a black listener.
Well, that's what our other black listener said.
Oh, that's true. He did.
So I don't want to get into a whole racial thing, particularly during these alt-right days. But Diedrich made a video a long time ago. I actually saw ages ago of the kids jamming with the Model X, and it's really cool. And he says, yes, indeed, he does celebrate Kwanzaa, which is my second favorite holiday, which is not Christmas or Hanukkah, so it would be the third or fourth. I still am a big fan.
But your favorite holiday is Thanksgiving.
My favorite holiday is Thanksgiving, but my most favorite is Festivus because of the airing of grievances.
Yeah, which we have to do some of that afterwards.
And he says, and it's him saying it, not me, so I can't be criticized, he's out of the land that is merry. So I'm just saying, thank you. Nathan Dwyer says, Mel, Tesla recently had an event in Denver that I attended, and I have the very same question to you. How do you get out of your cars in your X? And we've found out you go to the grill, the speaker grill, you pop it open, and then you pull the plug, and then the spring will open the door for you. It's so exciting.
And he says, I forgot the sarcastic aside of how easy it would be to disassemble that door panel when you're upside down and on fire.
Exactly. It is a bit upsetting.
It is hidden in the speaker grill, though, which I think is not the most ideal spot for it. Like, it just seems wrong, in my opinion.
Michael Deaver has another guy that is telling us about how you do some zero fossil fuel investing. So another stock tip there. Patrick, talking about superchargers. And he says, supercharger.info has a really nice visual representation of the current, under construction, and permitted Tesla charger. So there's a number of sites out there. This is another really good one. Dale Solomon says this. He lives in Western Australia. Western Australia, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is about 3.6 times the size of Texas.
Have you been there to Western Australia?
Oh, I have. It's big. It's
like Ben-Hur?
Huge. Bigger than Ben-Hur's buttocks. And so they're building a supercharger down south of Perth, which is sort of the big city you think about when you think about Western Australia, in Bunbury. And he says the next closest supercharger is 3,000 kilometers away. He's not sure, but he thinks it's the world's most isolated supercharger.
So there isn't a supercharger in Perth, but there's going to be one in Bunbury?
That's what
is
I was
Bunbury?
Thinking. I don't know. You're asking me how to pronounce it?
No, that's probably a bad idea. I apologize.
That's what I was thinking. Isn't there one in Perth? Apparently, he's suggesting that there is not.
The suggestion that is Dale's.
God. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take next week off. I'm going to be in New Zealand, going to be capturing a little audio there. But actually, what I might do is throw up some of the audio that we've been doing with Jess and Dave about the cars and the driving. So I might mix that together before I leave. Yeah. We'll throw that out next week. But the real show will be back in a couple of weeks. You have yourselves a wonderful new year. And Tom, got any good plans? What are you doing?
Be safe, be well. I'm not doing anything. I'm going to try to solid up my home with some better windows and energy efficiencies,
yes,
as it were. Continue the search for a freaking car.
Will
already
you get one already?
Oh my God. I want to drive the Bolt, but I can't. They won't let me. They don't have them. They're not available. So what do you want from me?
Do you
want
to drive my car while I'm in New Zealand?
Yeah, I really do. But I'm not gonna.
I'm not gonna let you.
Yeah, no, I didn't think
but
so.
For a second there you had a little glitch.
I was like,
You couldn't take the pressure. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, his name is Tom Wolfson. My name is Mel Herbert. That was Robert Rosenblum. We made a lot of fun of him after we left. We probably should have done more because you don't often get the opportunity to do that without one of us in the room.
Yeah, it's
he
true.
Always gives us great presents. We love him long time, and we love you all. Talk to you next year, a year from now.
Happy New Year, Tesla Nation!
Talking Tesla is a production of Foolibu Incorporated. Produced by Mel Herbert and CC Herbert. Hosted by Mel Herbert, Tom Wolfson, and Robert Rosenblum. To support Talking Tesla, go to patreon.com/talkingtesla.